Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, and my sympathy to you.
Yes, since Tim's not here, you're going right to the hockey thing.
Going right to the hockey thing.
Yes, my team beaten in game six. They got to go to game seven tomorrow night against the Boston Bruins, against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And maybe the most difficult thing about it is I have church tomorrow night.
Uh-oh.
The struggle.
My wife will be watching, too. You better not peek at your phone. Check the score. Well, God comes first by a long shot. I want to stress. So, all right, and then Walker Wildman, assistant to the president. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here on the show today.
And then we have from Kansas, of all places, Ray Pritchard, the anything but mediocre Ray Pritchard, Keep Believing Ministries. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Ed. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I walked into the studio this morning, and I heard you talking to Brent Creeley, our producer, and I said, oh, man, I forgot Ray was on this morning. I got to look up an adjective. Well, all I could think of was mediocre, but I know you're not mediocre, so I had to kind of twist it around.
Well, I thank you, and hello, folks. It's been a few weeks since I've been on. Since last time I was on it, we've moved from Dallas up to Shawnee, Kansas, and all I got to say, guys, is moving is for the young.
Oh, yes.
It is not for the old. Yeah, and let me tell you, I mean, you feel your age when you start unpacking everything and walking the steps and all that. So we're glad to be here and glad to be settling in.
Well, and Ray, you've been in the ministry for many, many years. So did you move a lot, like a lot of ministers, or did you kind of settle in?
This is our 10th move in 43 years. So. That's a lot.
You're an amateur.
It feels like a lot.
Oh, it does. Now listen, and then and we'll get to some news, folks. But I know you really want to hear what I have to say. maybe the worst thing about moving is the guilt that comes from realizing just how much junk you have accumulated over the years. And I will say the spiritual freedom that comes when you realize, what, I can't take it with me when I die? Good. I'm happy to hear it.
The real shock is when you throw away all your, quote, junk, right, and stuff, and then you realize there is still a mountain of it left.
Yes.
That's the crazy part.
My wife and I first got married in Bible school. When we left Springfield, Missouri, all our earthly belongings, including my wife's 60 pair of high heel shoes.
But who's counting?
We packed everything in the smallest U-Haul trailer.
Yeah.
The very smallest. Mm-hmm. And I had a Ford Pinto.
Oh, you.
So all our earthly belongings were in the Ford Pinto and the U-Haul. All right. That was it. The next move was a slightly bigger U-Haul trailer.
Right.
Yeah.
From then on, it was trucks and 18-wheelers. You know,
and eventually you have to hire someone.
I know.
That's right.
Absolutely. That's where
it
goes.
Well, we better get to some news here because I don't want people to go, listen, I got problems of my own. I got junk of my own. I don't want to hear about yours. So, Fred, what's happening in the news? I know we have a terrible thing from yesterday.
In Toronto, yeah, since we met here on Today's Issues yesterday, early yesterday afternoon in Toronto, Canada, a man... the suspect has been identified as 25-year-old Alex Minashian. He is the suspect believed to have been driving this Ryder rental truck, and he mowed down a couple of dozen people. 10 have died. 16 were hospitalized. Now, eyewitnesses said without any mercy, this man continued down streets, sidewalks, just rolling over people. One of them was a woman walking with a little baby in a carriage. I mean, there was no mercy shown. Now, if this description kind of sounds like things we've heard before in various places of the world, Islamic terrorism, whether it's in France, in London a few years ago on the London Bridge, in New York. What was it, last fall in New York? We had those people visiting from Argentina.
Right.
Some guy rents a truck in New Jersey, goes over to New York, and mows those people down. Now, at this moment, authorities in Toronto are reluctant to even call it terrorism, let alone Islamic terrorism. We don't know much about this 25-year-old man yet, other than he lives in Richmond Hill, which is one of the suburbs of Toronto. But the investigation will continue. But looking at how things transpired, looking at how things were done, let me put it this way. It would not surprise me if eventually it is called an act of terrorism. I don't know what else you would call it. And I would not be surprised if perhaps he's a member of a mosque.
Now, Fred, was this a rented truck that he used
Yes.
for this? Okay. Isn't that similar to what at least one of the occasions in France when they used a rented truck to mow people down?
Yeah, similar to the one in France and similar to the one in New York City
Wow.
just a few months ago. So that's why I say the modus operandi here is very similar to what we have seen in other Islamic terrorism attacks over the last few years.
Well, and we were just talking about, what can you do about this? We were just talking about renting U-Hauls
mm-hmm.
and
right.
you know, just ordinary people renting
sure.
a truck to move their family or to move across town or to move their business. Mm-hmm. There's no, it's not like buying materials for a bomb
yeah.
where someone can put two and two together and say,
right.
this looks suspicious. Mm-hmm. You're talking about people who just, who rent trucks. This is how U-Haul and, well, what are the other companies that, that you know, rent these
Ryder,
all these, that's their business. They
well, somebody was suggesting yesterday, maybe we need to start screening people better who rent trucks.
Yeah,
what does that mean?
Right.
I mean, this guy has no police record. He's only 25 years old.
Yeah.
Going to college there in the north end of Toronto. So he's got nothing on the screen, no police record. So what do you do with, what do you mean by screening people who rent trucks or U-Haul trailers? I don't understand that.
Isn't it true that about 20% of the population moves in any given year, 20 to 25%? We're a mobile
mm-hmm.
society.
Right.
So
sure.
how can you possibly track everybody who rents a U-Haul, a Penske, a Ryder truck like this fellow did yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we went to, you know, rent our stuff to get ready to move, there was just a long line and people one after the other after
right.
the other. So that doesn't seem to be a good way to stop it. Now, a second question I want to ask is, was he by himself when he did this?
Yes.
So yes. we've got a lone actor here. I mean, presumably
mm-hmm.
a lone actor with a rented truck who's just driving down, and then he hits the gas, you know, hops onto the sidewalk. I mean, maybe it's not terrorism, but it sure looks that way now, doesn't it?
Oh, there's no question about it. That the street, Yonge Street in Toronto, is a 20 or 30 mile long street, south to north from Lake
wow.
Ontario. It goes back. He began his attack at the corner of Yonge and Finch. Was at the kind of the north end. And so he knew it was going to be busy. Yesterday was a beautiful sunny day. They've had rotten weather there. People have been inside.
Yeah.
He knew a lot of people were going to be out on the sidewalk. Like I say, it was around 1 o'clock Eastern time yesterday. Pile of people out on the sidewalks, walking around, shopping. Like I said, there was one woman with a baby in a carriage, all of that sort of thing. So he picked a time, he picked a place where he knew there would be a maximum number of people.
Well, and this is, you know, something that Tim Wildman often says is these people aren't crazy.
Mm.
Okay, so you have
right.
the shooter. Remember the last shooter where you pull the fire alarm
yeah.
to get kids coming out into the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have easier access at for more fatalities.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you have the same kind of thing in New York City where this individual knew that this was the part where people would run, bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
It's separated from traffic. Now, mm-hmm. did they ever come out with a motive? Was that terrorism?
I believe they determined that pretty quickly because of his connections. I think he was an immigrant
okay.
From a Muslim country. in that case, or his relatives or his mother and dad were. But that definitely, I think that right away, that wasn't a difficult one. I think in Canada, from whence I come, very politically correct.
Right.
And about the last thing somebody was telling me this morning, the mayor of Toronto right away has come out and said, let's not jump to assumptions here. Let's be very careful. Toronto has it's a city of 4 to 5 million people, large center, very large population of Muslims in that city. So we'll just have to wait and see. But sooner or later, I've been checking the papers up there in Toronto this morning, Toronto Sun and some of the others. Toronto Sun, more so than the Globe and Mail up there, if there's something more to be known about this guy, they will find it out.
All right. Well, we're going to move on, and we will, folks, check out One News Now and keep listening to American Family News, and we will whatever we find out, whatever our team finds out, we will be letting you know. Well, we're going to move on. Frank Turek is joining us now. He's an author, apologetics expert. Our folks are well familiar with Frank. He's on most Tuesdays with us here on Today's Issues. He's host of the radio program Cross-Examined that is heard on American Family Radio Talk each Saturday from 9 to 10 Central and Sunday from 4 to 5 Central. Frank, welcome back.
Gentlemen, how are things?
Well, things are going well here. We were just talking about the Toronto attack. You have any thoughts on that before we move on?
Well, just what you guys have already said, one of the problems I think we have not only here in America, but especially in Canada, is this political correctness prevents people from speaking and knowing the truth. Hopefully that will not be the case in this situation. Now, we don't know if this guy was an Islamic terrorist. We don't know at this point. But if he was, then obviously that needs to be known.
Yeah. And we will. Well, hopefully that'll come out, you know, fairly quickly. And this just seems to be the way of life in the West. Mm-hmm. This is just going to be, you know, here, there, somewhere else, mm-hmm. where this is just going to be a part of life, like Israel has had to experience for decades. Frank, one of the things we wanted to talk to you about, we know you always have an interesting take. You're a student of the Word. You're a preacher, a Bible teacher. You also follow a lot of the trends in culture. We wanted to talk to you about some of the things that seem to be going on in within evangelicalism. We had the Wheaton College kind of get together, the tea and crumpets or whatever we had. That was last week, right, Fred? Was
No, it's Monday and Tuesday.
We want to talk about evangelical leaders like some of those who were up there at that meeting, who were opposed to President Trump but were not vocal against President Obama, or did not seem, as far as we can tell, to criticize individuals who voted for Hillary Clinton, who were evangelicals. What do you make of this seeming divide that is going on within evangelicalism? You used to be able to say, well, we have a small percentage of evangelicals who are, you know, to the left on certain issues. Most evangelicals are against abortion and homosexuality, kind of a little bit monolithic, but now we seem to be splintering. What do you make of this?
Well, it's a hard problem because I don't know the people that were at the meeting. I've heard of some of them. I know Darrell Bach. You know, he's a Dallas Theological Seminary professor. He's a very respected New Testament scholar. I don't know about the other folks that were there, but I think what we need to keep in mind when we're talking about politics is that it's always a choice between the lesser of two evils. I mean, if Billy Graham were running against Hitler, it would still be the loss of the choice between the lesser of two evils. Now, obviously, I'd go with Billy Graham, but you get the idea that none of us are like Jesus. We all have our flaws. And in the previous election, obviously, both sides had tremendous flaws and continue to have them. I guess the best you can do is, if you're an evangelical, is you vote for the platform and you vote for bringing an administration into town from a federal level that will most likely line up with what you think is best for society according to natural law, according to the New Testament. And for me, as much as I had to hold my nose, that was the Trump administration, but I'm no advocate of everything Trump does. That's certainly for sure. I just thought he was the lesser of the two evils between he and Hillary. What did you think?
Frank, let me ask you a follow-up question here. You know, since Mr. Trump has come into office, I mean, we have had these revelations about alleged past affairs.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of lurid stuff out there. And I'm saying alleged because it hasn't been proven yet. Those folks who are meeting Wheaton, you know, they are shocked by that. And we don't want to spend any time defending any of that if it is in fact true. But how should those revelations impact the way we look at our president? Or should we just say this is just who he was?
Yeah, well, I think it should be a problem for us as Christians to support somebody who, if those allegations are true, has engaged in that kind of thing. Now, to my knowledge, he hasn't admitted it, and he hasn't come out and repented of it either. I personally, just speaking for me now, I have no doubt those are probably true. I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire. But again, where we stand now, what are we to do about this?
Right.
Are we to say, well, Trump ought to be impeached for something that happened 12 years ago?
Right.
Well, no, probably not. Impeachment has to do with high crimes and misdemeanors. Usually, I guess, it means when you're in office.
Right, right.
You know, not something prior to that. And I think the American people understood he was not a choir boy. I do think it's interesting, though, that if Trump right now were a Democrat who was supporting the Democrat platform, evangelicals would be outraged. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
Well, I think that was, and I'm going to let some of the other guys jump in. I think that was clearly the case with
Bill Clinton.
With Bill Clinton.
Yeah,
sure.
I think Chris, and I've, you know, just, again, I don't want to dumb, I want to let Fred and Walker jump in here. I've had to actually go back and revisit my refusal to cut. Now I will say this. We don't want to get into all the, like Fred, you know, like someone said here, the lurid details might have been Ray. I'm not talking about the difference between there was allegations of rape with Bill Clinton, you know, prior to him becoming president. I just think it's a good point that you're making, that as Christians, you can't excuse the behavior of one person because you like what he or she stands for, and then excoriate somebody else for doing similar things because you don't agree. That's a dangerous trap to fall into. But anyway, Walker, go ahead.
Yeah, Frank. Well, one thought on that is with President Clinton, it was he admitted to it, and it was in the Oval Office while he was in office. And I think if President Trump did something similar in the Oval Office, we would all be outraged.
I agree.
That is a distinction. Yeah.
So, one question, Frank. When it comes to the meeting at Wheaton College, and I know there's not many details out there as far as what went on there, but for the most part, and I'm generalizing here, I can understand how some evangelicals might be frustrated or disappointed that Christians came out and voted for President Trump, despite his characteristic flaws and his characteristic issues. But I don't see them coming out and applying the same standard to Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. For example, Dr. Russell Moore met with Barack Obama in the Oval Office, shook his hand, praised him, but he wouldn't meet with Trump. So why don't they apply that same standard to the Democrats? It seems to be a one-way street.
Yeah, unless Russell Moore, and I don't know Russell Moore's heart, but unless he's saying, well, Obama personally appears to be a moral guy. I don't agree with his policies, so I'll still meet with him. Trump seems to have all these personal moral flaws, but I do agree with these policies, and I won't meet with him. So I don't know what calculus is going on in Russell Moore's mind.
Right.
The point is that, just to be honest, look, in 2016, we had a choice between two bad choices. I mean, really. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the lesser of the two evils was Trump. And I think that's proven to be the case, at least to this point, with regard to his policy, you know, some of his personal behavior. You're going, you're acting like a 3-year-old. What are you doing? You know, but in terms of his policies have been fairly strong, I think, from a conservative perspective.
Hey, let's broaden this just a little bit in the minute of time we have left. And Fred, we'll give you the next question here. But Frank, just kind of let's broaden this a little bit and talk about the state of evangelicalism. I know that's a lot to throw on you here with less than 5 minutes left. As you travel around and you get to meet with people and speak in different locations, what are you seeing in terms of the evangelical community, just spiritually speaking?
Well, look, I have very limited perspective. Even though I do travel a lot and go to a lot of high schools and churches and colleges, it's not survey data. It's anecdotal data. I think one of the biggest problems we have as evangelicals is that we don't really understand why Christianity is true, and we have a very shallow understanding of Christian doctrine. We tend to take verses out of context just to apply to our own lives, and we don't really understand the revelation like we should. So I think that's one problem. I think the other problem we have is that, look, there's a lot of great people doing great work who never get media attention. Who gets media attention? The people that get media attention who are evangelicals are in some way connected to politics. But most people who are evangelicals, most of the pastors out there, most of the people who are just evangelical workers out there in the world are quietly going about their lives doing the Lord's work, and you don't hear about them in the mass media because they're not covered by the mass media. And so the mass media thinks evangelicalism is some sort of their focus, or the sharp edge of point of the spear is politics. Well, that's certainly a concern of evangelicals. But as Franklin Graham put on his Facebook page the other day, the gospel is about saving people and making them more like Jesus. It's not the tip of the spear is not politics. Well, as I say, that's important. But we're trying to define evangelicalism by who they support politically. That's not the focus of evangelicalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good points. Question both for you, Frank, and maybe Ray, too. I see, and Frank, you visit a lot with young people. As you move around the country in your debates, university campuses, I hear a lot coming out of the younger evangelical community that our focus ought to be social justice.
Yeah.
How do you respond when you hear that? Is it a good thing, or are there some dangers in there?
Well, there's some dangers, but I think we ought to be concerned about justice in society, but that's not the focus. Jesus said, "I did not come to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many." Mm. He came as a ransom. In fact, if you read the Gospel of John, there's not one word in there really about social justice. Mm. What's it really all about? I'm not saying you shouldn't be concerned with, I'm saying you are, but that's not the focus of Christianity. Ravi Zacharias has put it this way famously. He said, God did not come, Jesus did not come to make bad people good. He came to make dead people live. And if you make dead people live, then you will change society for the better. But you can't do it in the opposite way. Christ came to save people from our sins. He didn't come primarily to do social justice projects. That wasn't his focus. Again, I'm not trying to say that shouldn't be a concern. It's just not the concern.
Ray, we're going to give you 30 seconds, buddy.
Well, look, Frank has said it, hit the nail on the head. Christ came to seek and to save that which was lost. And the best thing we can do for the world is to get the gospel out so that dead men come to life. And once you are transformed by the power of Jesus Christ, you're going to look for a way to make a difference in the world in Jesus' name. And I think that's the gospel emphasis.
Wow, love it. Good stuff. Hey, Frank, thank you so much for being on. Cross-Examined is heard on AFR Talk each Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Time. Sunday, 4 to 5 p.m. Central Time. That is right after the news in both of those hours. Thanks, Frank.
Hey, thanks. We're going to talk about why Jesus is angry this week, so check that out.
All right. Well, that's that's always a scary topic. All right, folks, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have more. On today's issue, Sandy Rios will be joining us. We'll be hearing about some of the other things going on in our country. So please return back. This is American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues. Be back in a flash.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
It would be sinful for me to be a public success in a private failure. We must never forget that the calling to ministry in God's kingdom begins in Jerusalem. Family is first.
We'll also hear news headlines and analysis from Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Did you know George Washington, the father of our country, he loved being at home at Mount Vernon? In fact, he said he'd rather be at home at Mount Vernon than dining with all the princes and royalty of Europe. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Mount Vernon on our spiritual heritage tour in September, and we'd love to have you join us for this very special time. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be with us as we go all over our nation's capital. We'll go to the Capitol, the Library of Congress, the World War II Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial, all the places you want to see in our nation's capital. We'll see that, but we'll also go to Mount Vernon. Now, for all the information on this September tour, including a side trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, you can check it out at spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information on our September tours. And we'll see you then.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Preschoolers in Georgetown, Massachusetts are no longer permitted to have best friends. That's the rule at Pentucket Workshop Preschool. 4-year-old Julia Hartwell was told by her teacher best friends are a no-no. Her mother thought that was just absurd, so she reached out to the school. The principal explained that even when used in a loving way, the phrase best friend can make other children feel excluded. They fear that best friends could lead to the formation of cliques. Instead, the school wants children to have a broader group of friends to encourage inclusivity. Honestly, it sounds like a grade-A load of socially engineered fertilizer to me, shoveled by a bunch of highbrow intellectuals who probably never even had a best friend. But it's part of a growing trend among public schools to dissuade kids from having BFFs or besties. Quite frankly, the attack on best friends does not seem all that friendly. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Good morning. Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. I'm Tim Wildman. This is my show. And all these other guys here, you know, take some while to fill in for me. I'm just kidding. I'm not that much of an egomaniac. I don't think. Am I?
You are not.
Am I?
We know, and if you were, we wouldn't tell you.
You don't ever want to cross an egomaniac. No.
Not when he's your boss.
We understand it's tongue-in-cheek what you're saying.
Go, Dr. Ray Pritchard. Ray, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Doing good. You get all that moving done?
Oh, man. I was telling the guys in the last segment, it's for the birds. It's for the young guys. Do you remember, Tim, when you were 25 or 30 and, you know, people were going to move from Chicago to San Francisco and they just took two boxes, threw it in the backseat of the car, and off you went, right? Yeah,
that's those, movies.
Yeah, those, that's right. The those movies.
The reality is quite different.
Yeah, exactly. Allison and I, my wife, were helping move her mom right now, and she's been in the same house for 45 years.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh. And you, yeah, I don't care how thrifty you are, or, you know, if you're not a hoarder.
Yeah.
If you're in somewhere, if you're in the same house for 45 years, you by osmosis become a hoarder. You know, so we're like going through stuff, and wow, it's just amazing what you can collect over that period of time.
You just need to rent a flamethrower. That's probably the most efficient thing to do.
No, now don't tell my mother-in-law what I'm about to tell you, okay?
Do not listen. Pay no attention.
So Allison, we're over there helping her, you know, several nights a week, and she's doing all she can too, but, I mean, it just takes more than one person.
Yep.
So when Brenda walks down the hall to do something, Allison says,
trash.
Trash. Trash.
Behind her back?
Yeah, so, well, like, we don't want to really ask Mom too much about it.
Oh, I see.
We don't want to, because if she starts going through that stack, we're going to be here all night. So.
Right. And plus, you connect stuff with memories.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And a lot of people go, oh, I can't because right. that was given to me.
Right,
you
right.
know, it's hard right. not to do that.
I know. With it's human nature.
Yeah.
All right. Ed, Fred, Walker, Tim, and Ray, I hope you got it all. Folks, and we have a lady gracing our program right now. Sandy Rios joins us. Sandy's heard each morning on Sandy Rios in the Morning, and here on American Family Radio. Sandy also serves as Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association, so she's our liaison to the government in Washington, D.C. Good morning, Sandy.
Yeah, but, you know, I think the reason you asked me on is because you want to talk about housekeeping and packing, you know, and throwing things away, yeah. right? You want yeah. my expertise on yeah. that.
AFR's own Martha Stewart right here.
You know what? I'll tell you something funny. In the high-rise in D.C., we have moved 5 times. And we got it down to a science. We use shopping carts.
Oh, in the same building, you mean?
Yes. We use shopping carts, and we have hired like 3 Marines and a truck, you know, to do the really huge things. But we got it down to a science, and it's so funny that my daughter-in-law bought us a shopping cart Christmas decoration that we hang on our tree.
You know, now this is funny because Sandy Rios is she's an elegant lady, very classy yeah. lady. I can just imagine her, you know, moving. You're not going to be elegant and classy when you're moving. So Sandy Rios in sweats, maybe her hair up, with a shopping cart full of junk, getting on and off the elevator. Someone saying, "I don't know, we had bag ladies living in the building."
Yeah, kind of like that. Actually, yeah. you got it pretty well featured. Yeah,
I didn't know we had homeless people living in this high rise.
Well, I want to know where you get the shopping cart. I mean, do you go to Walmart?
You don't ask that question.
Yeah. I don't want to go down that
well,
road.
Well, no, I can tell you, we have just 2 blocks away is a 24-hour grocery store, and so people from our building will bring back their groceries. They're not supposed to do that, but then there's a whole bunch of them in the basement. You know, so we just use them, you know.
So it's not my fault.
That's right.
That's right. I just
borrowed it.
Accessory to the crime, I guess. But we put them back.
Put them back where you found them.
That's right, in the basement.
Oh my word! I think moving is—it's in the top 5 worst things in life.
Yeah.
I think.
And stress. I mean, it is literally one of the top 5 stressors. And the mental health professionals will say that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they will.
Seriously.
They said moving, changing jobs, like changing marital status.
Yeah.
Even, you know, getting married yeah. or divorced or mm-hmm. Loss of a loved
so
one.
So moving is in that
moving
top 5.
Moving is in the top 5.
Okay. All right. Sandy.
Yes, sir.
So much in the news.
What's your recipe for lasagna?
Yeah, well, don't ask me about cooking or dogs or sports because I can't have nothing to say about that.
Even though she did sing at the Chicago Bears football game.
Yes,
yes, I know
right.
about so that. Yes.
Chicago.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. We haven't talked about this. James Comey, the former director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, he wrote a book. About his, I guess, I don't know, I haven't read it, so I guess it's mostly about his experiences in the FBI. And is it me, or does it seem unseemly for someone, and I would hope I would say this, even if it were a Republican, I guess he is a Republican, but you know what I'm saying, if it were a situation were reversed, it just seems wrong to me, especially this early after his tenure, to write some kind of a book, go on a book tour, sort of a kiss and tell type thing. How does that strike you?
No, you're spot on, Tim, because actually the FBI has very strict rules about that. And if you're a current agent or a former agent, the rest of your life, you are, and I don't know if it's a statute or if it's a internal rule, I'm not sure how to characterize it, but there you have to agree to let your manuscript be reviewed, and you can't go public with something unless it's, and that doesn't have to do necessarily with national security. You have to be vetted. There are a lot of cases about that. Actually, my husband and I have been talking about that because he remembers some very specific cases of people who were not allowed to do that, and others who were, and it was very controversial. It is a very big deal. So it's funny you should ask that, because Judicial Watch actually has subpoenaed the records of any correspondence between James Comey and the leadership of the FBI on just how it happened that he got the okay to write a book like this when he's so close to having served as the FBI director. Did they see it before they gave him the okay? Because that's the rule. They're supposed to read it in its entirety. You know, so just how did that work? Judicial Watch is trying to find that out. So I think you're spot on.
Does he, I'm going to ask a duh question, I guess, right here. He has a personal, seems to have a personal animosity, and that's a light word, for President Trump, and maybe has since the get-go. Would there be a reason for that? Do you think President Trump, he didn't like his politics, didn't like his way? Well, what's the deal there?
Well, I think we got some insight when we saw James Comey's wife speaking out in an interview with George Stephanopoulos. And during that interview, and that was just a few weeks ago, actually, she said that she loves Hillary Clinton. She worked, she wanted her to win. She and her daughters, James Comey's daughters, attended the Women's March the day after the inauguration in D.C. with all that vulgarity and the hats and all of that.
Okay.
She was all into that. So that's, I think it's three daughters, at least three. And they're all into, and she said she was really so upset that Hillary didn't win. So that's where he lives, you know, and how can we know then? It obviously has affected him. He treated Barack Obama and President Trump so differently. You know, when he made such a big deal about the number of conversations he'd had with Trump and how he notated all of that, that's silly, Tim. FBI directors talk to the presidents all the time. That's not unusual. But did he take copious notes when he talked to Loretta Lynch or Barack Obama? No. Didn't do that. Just took notes, notating everything Donald Trump said. And I think that His bias was huge. Remember when he was in that meeting, one of the first, with President Trump, and he said he hid behind a curtain? I mean, he's, 6'7"? He tried to hide behind the curtain because he was afraid. And then President Trump calls him across the room. This is in the White House. And he comes over, and President Trump tries to give him a real warm handshake, and Comey's just kind of, like, repelled. So I don't think it takes a mastermind or, you know, the deep state to figure out that James Comey held President Trump in disdain from the very beginning.
One other question, then we'll let you go here, and we'll then the four or five of us will decide how you did here on your answer.
Some things never change.
Now, this is a question. I know you have a personal friendship with Attorney General Sessions and have for a long time. But still, that doesn't keep you from making an objective analysis, I don't think, of his job performance. Somebody the other day, I think it was what's the guy on that used to be on C, Lou Dobbs. Lou Dobbs basically says he's a phantom, talking about Attorney General Sessions. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah,
he calls him a phantom because we don't really see or hear from him like we have former attorney generals, at least as of yet. Of course, anybody that's going to serve under President Trump's going to be in his shadow. I mean,
right.
That's just the way it is. However, how are we, Sandy, to grade out the attorney general thus far?
Tim, look, I'll tell you what I know, and of course, yes, I do like him a lot. I know that General Sessions is kind of shy and is not a grandstander. So he doesn't run out to the mic to say everything he's doing. You might notice that some of the people, and that Trump is the exception. Trump actually does more things than he says, you know? And we know that the output of his work is voluminous. That's unusual, though. Most of the people you see in front of the mic talking, yep, 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 don't do much. But I think that in case of General Sessions, he's doing tons. You just don't hear about it. I'll give you an example. I read, it's because how would you know this? Unless Fox reports it, nobody else is going to report it. As I understand it, he's convened at least three grand juries to look into the alleged collusion between the Justice Department and the FBI, to the Hillary Clinton Foundation, and I can't recall what the third one is. But there are. This is inside information. Not a secret. It's stuff that the Beltway people talk about that he's doing. He's also gone outside of D.C. to hire seasoned attorneys to investigate things that are going on in Washington instead of using inside the Beltway people. He's got an attorney from Chicago working on Clinton email, and I can't recall the other state, but South Dakota, something like that, working on another one of them. He's farmed out the Clinton email investigation to, I think it's the FBI Bureau in Arkansas. So he's doing a lot of things besides all of his work on the border and on illegal immigration. You can bet he's got his pedal to the metal on that. So, look, do I wish things were different? Do I wish that he hadn't recused himself? Do I wish that he'd be more vocal, that he would fire Rosenstein? Yes. You know, yes, mm-hmm. There are things that I would like this, but I don't know everything. I will tell you this. This is something you guys should know and our listeners should know. MoveOn.org is all set. They have produced a manual, multiple pages. I couldn't even print it out, on what to do in the case of Donald Trump firing Mueller, firing Rosenstein, or pardoning people as a result of the arrest of his attorney. And this is what you do in these cases. So they put out all the scenarios. They have prepared already in excess of 700 nationwide protests, and they are to schedule to begin within like 6 or 12 hours of the announcement. They've got template emails to send out to your list. It's a massive plan to disrupt the country, and that's about being put on. That's being organized by MoveOn.org. So these are things that we wouldn't know, mm-hmm. most of us, but this is something the president and his people probably know. So he's got to weigh all of that, and so does Jeff Sessions, has to weigh all of that against what's the best move. It's complicated. It's not simple. So I'm just praying, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Praying for him. I'm praying for the president. I pray for Melania. I pray for this country.
Yeah. Sandy, thanks so much.
Appreciate yeah, you're welcome.
All right,
okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Sandy Cart Lady Rios right there.
That was pretty funny.
Boy, she's. I'm glad Sandy's on our team, right?
Yes, she is.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, she did good. How'd she do? She did real good on that segment, but she always does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I guess Walker's already promoted our internet
No,
present.
I actually haven't.
We have not.
We were waiting on you.
Okay, go ahead. Tell them what we're doing.
Yeah, we're on Today's Issues on Facebook, just like we are each day, and you can watch the show there.
Can I have to have a little more bigger?
Well, you started it. You said, go ahead.
Go ahead. Like you don't want to do it. Yeah, like it's just your job.
No, you got to get me excited to do it.
Okay. Walker.
So, I'll get you excited.
Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah.
Tell us what we're doing.
Last week was Share-a-thon.
Yeah.
And throughout the days, we had a number of people call from Alaska,
yeah,
where we don't have radio stations. So they are listening to us on the internet using our app.
Mm-hmm. That's why I want Walker to get excited about it.
That's right. I'm trying to wrap it up here.
you set the tone. Go ahead and tell them about it.
So, okay.
Go ahead and tell them about it.
I like you mocking your daddy to me.
That's
anyway,
right.
We'll talk about this off the air.
That's right. Okay. Little father-son chat.
Folks, if you want to watch our show on the internet, you getting this?
Yes. This
if you
want
to watch our show on the internet, go to Facebook. They haven't shut us down yet, and go to Facebook, and you can type in Today's Issues and watch the show there and comment on the program. And Walker, my ever excitable son over here, he is posting the stories that we are discussing on the program, so you'll have access to the
boy,
information.
Howdy.
Yeah. So also, Walker got through to YouTube, and we're on YouTube, too. So go to YouTube, and you can live video stream the show, Today's Issues, on YouTube, on American Family Radio. All right, Fred Jackson, what's next in the news?
Well, yesterday, Mike Pompeo, who is President Trump's, he is CIA director now. He is President Trump's nominee for Secretary of State. Remember, there was some real controversy. He may not make it out of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee because Senator Rand Paul, a Republican, was saying, I'm not going to vote for him. And we thought the Democrats en masse were not going to vote for him. But that all kind of changed late yesterday. And so the committee passed him out. 11-9 was the vote. Senator Rand Paul said he had a phone call from President Trump and kind of came around, and he had a visit with Mike Pompeo, a personal visit. And then there was at least one Democratic senator, I think Senator Coons, who was willing to vote for Mike Pompeo. So he's out of committee now. In the next couple of days, he's expected to go to the Senate, where they say there are at least four or five Democrats who will vote in favor of him there. So it looks like Mike Pompeo will be the next Secretary of State. Now, there is a new controversy as of this morning. Tomorrow, Wednesday, we were supposed to start a hearing. The Senate was supposed to start a hearing with President Trump's nominee to head up the VA, the Veteran Affairs Department. And the president's nominee for that is Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson, who also happens to be the president's personal physician. That was all supposed to start tomorrow, but it has been delayed. Now, there is some scuttlebutt, we'll call it, out there, that some people, both Republicans and Democrats, have concerns. One of the concerns that's been raised publicly is that Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson, a fairly young man, they say he doesn't have the experience to run the VA, which has...
Yeah, he could get a bad reputation.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? He's got a stellar one now, but if he can bring it down.
Bring it down. Now, there's some more. There is, and it's a little bit vague at this point in that he has had some personal problems, Rear Admiral Jackson. There is one report, and I'm just passing it along. It may be totally false.
It's called a rumor, Fred.
It's called a rumor that he may have had a drinking problem.
This is from, are we talking about a rumor? This is being reported by the New York Times.
Yes.
So the rumors out there from the mainstream media.
Yes. All of the rumors, reports have resulted in a delay of the confirmation hearings.
Wow. I wish that if all the senators and congressmen who had drinking problems were disqualified from office, that
we
might
could start all
up.
Over.
That's we could.
Right. That's right. There would be no more Congress. No quorum.
That's right. Man, this is awesome. Let's set that standard up.
That's right.
Oh, my word. So that's the he's up for the VA. That was one of President Trump Ray's campaign issues, not one of the main ones, but he did mention often that he wanted to reform the Veterans Administration because it has had a bad reputation.
It's been in a mess.
Yeah, for a long time. So, that's what that's what the president's trying to address. Why he would choose this gentleman, I don't know, but President Trump doesn't necessarily, he does think outside the box sometimes, and he may have met this fella. He did meet him. He's his personal doctor. Mm-hmm. And thought, I'm just guessing here. We're speculating. This is a sharp guy. Mm-hmm. I think I can put him in charge of things. He understands the Veteran Administration, and he can help clean things up, and I know him personally well. So, Ray, that may have been his thinking there.
One of the things the president values clearly is personal loyalty. I mean, that's come up over and over again. All presidents want their appointees to be loyal, right? Mm-hmm. But for Mr. Trump, that's a very high value. So this fellow is his personal physician. He has seen the president in every situation, I suppose you could say, and they've had many talks. So I'm imagining the president looks at this fellow and says, everything you said, Tim, plus I can trust him. He's going to be loyal to me. I'd hate to see him get derailed over something. I mean, who knows? The drinking problem, it's out there. I mean, the alleged drinking problem. He sounds like a good man.
Yeah.
To be, and that's a tough position, Tim. I mean, there are a lot of cabinet positions I would think that would be easier than heading up the VA right now.
Well, because you're talking about a department that has at least some degree of dysfunction to it. You know, if you're head of Health and Human Services, there may be policy decisions that you have to make that are controversial or not controversial, depending on which part of the political spectrum you're on. But at least it's a functioning bureaucracy the VA has had some real criticisms because of dysfunctionality. So, like, to your point, Ray, is this really the job I want? You know, or maybe he's got a vision to really reform it and correct some of the abuses that have gone on.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on AFR. Hey, related to that topic, I wanted to ask you guys, we got about 5 minutes here, 4 or 5 minutes here, and this is while we're speculating. You know, it seems like daily, Fred, we discuss things having to do with the president and this administration and the resistance that's out there, especially by the Democrats, but also somewhat by the Republican establishment, although they try to hide it oftentimes. I just don't believe that President Trump, you know, people on our side sometimes say, well, President Trump shouldn't do that, or he shouldn't say that, or he shouldn't react that way. And that is true. President Trump also is very human and more transparent and more, I guess, out front. He's not real reserved, okay? Mm-hmm. His personality type. So I say this, I just don't believe, though, that he could have been a businessman and been as successful as he has been all these years, his personal moral problems over the decades notwithstanding. But had he not been at least somewhat level-headed, somewhat serious-minded, somewhat thoughtful, mm-hmm. Not more than somewhat, I say these things because I believe his reactionary things that he does that are sometimes unbecoming are only because, or in large part because, he is attacked every single day from morning to night relentlessly. The Democrats are opposing every single thing he does, and they're opposing it for the most part with solidarity. I give you an example in the news right now is Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State. Republicans have never opposed a Secretary of State choice by a Democratic president, at least not in mass. These Democrats they've said, we're going to oppose him everything. I don't care if he wants 2 scrambled eggs. We're going to say no. Yeah,
that's right.
We're going to say no for breakfast. Mm-hmm. So you got to put his reaction sometimes in that context.
Oh, absolutely. He was CEO. That's his background. Politics is not his background. As a business leader, he made business decisions every day. And in making those decisions, he didn't call a committee meeting. Let's sit around.
But he did listen to others.
He listened to others. He hired good people.
Right.
I'll listen to it. But at the end of the day, I'm going to make the decision because I'm the CEO.
And I trust my instincts.
And I trust my instincts. So then he's thrown into the Washington swamp, where everybody has to sit around and everybody has to have an opinion on things. And
every group wants their piece.
Yes.
Every group wants their piece. Sandy Rios had an interview with a gentleman this morning. They were talking about Mitch McConnell. You know, Mitch McConnell's been in Washington so long, he abides by tradition. That's how he lives. Donald Trump is 180 degrees to that.
Right.
Donald Trump just wants to get the job done.
Right.
I promised these things to the American people.
Right.
This is what I want done. And if you get in my way, I'm probably going to fire you. And I'm going to tell you on Twitter, I don't like you.
Right.
This is the way he is. Washington has exploded because that's not the way it operates.
Right. So, it's just every single day he's resisted at every turn on every issue by the Democrats and oftentimes...
the mainstream media.
certainly the media. They beat him to death every single day. Sleepy Eyes, what do you call the Chuck Todd? Sleepy Eyes,
yep.
Chuck? we'll be back in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.